Welcome to this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Thank you so much for joining us today. In the second half of today's show, we'll bring you another episode of our in-house podcast, In Session. Governor Armstrong's determination to pass property tax reform has stalled, and we wonder, with all the pre-election hubbub about property taxes, what's holding it up? Plus, Matt Olien will stop by the Main Street studio. He'll review the movie Sinners. And also today, we're continuing our very short spring pledge drive. We hope you agree that now is a great time to become a pledging supporter of Prairie Public. You can go right now to our website at prairiepublic.org and click on the donate button. Plus, we'll have a little more information about our pledge drive coming up.
The experience of being deployed, it's never left me. It was because I was under this intense combat experience, but it was an experience. I think that it's always going to be a part of you. We left with 70, we came back with 70. The hard part was losing them afterward.
And we begin Main Street today with our good friend Matt Olien. Matt is the producer, writer, and narrator of two upcoming films on Prairie Public. One is Wounded, the other is It's Never Left Me. Matt, welcome to Main Street.
Thanks, Craig.
Matt, as we begin our discussion, what inspired you and what inspired the station to tell the stories that are told in both Wounded and It's Never Left Me?
Well, these came out of the Minnesota Legacy Fund. I want to credit them, you know, in Minnesota, that provides a lot of funding for projects on Minnesota subjects. And we wanted to do a couple of military documentaries. They're both half hour long. They've been a lot of work. This has been going on for about a year and a half, trying to cobble these two documentaries together. But I managed to find a lot of really good people to interview. These are Minnesota veterans. The focus in the grant has to be on, you know, veterans who are either from Minnesota or live in Minnesota or served in Minnesota units. So It's Never Left Me. And if I can say, too, these will premiere in Detroit Lakes at the Historic Homes Theater May 14th, 7 p.m. It's Never Left Me, 7:30 p.m. is Wounded, and then I'll have a Q&A discussion on stage with some of the people in the show after that. So that's the premiere, and then the broadcast premieres are May 15th at 8:30 for Wounded and May 22nd at 8:30 p.m. for It's Never Left Me.
That's on the television service of Prairie Public. Yeah.
So getting back to what I was talking about, so yeah, we found a lot of really interesting people. It's Never Left Me focuses on soldiers who were in the second Iraq War, so not the 1991 war, which was like 35 days, the second one under George W. Bush, which went on and on and on, and the Afghanistan conflict post 9/11. So this focuses on these soldiers who are all in their 40s now, who were involved in the surge over in Iraq or involved in trying to defeat the Taliban in Afghanistan. And it's really them telling their stories of what happened over there. But also, as we went along editing the documentary and interviewing people, Craig, the documentary also kind of morphed into this mental health PTSD aspect when they got home. So it's really a combination of war stories plus the coping mechanisms that they had to go through when they got home, because, you know, the PTSD thing is something that was never talked about in the World War I, World War II eras. Now it's definitely front and center with mental health. You know, veterans are at a higher rate for suicide, as you know, Craig. And so it's really a combination of those two things. And I think we got a lot of really good, interesting people to talk about and really open up about things. I was very surprised and heartened that they were willing to talk and really be open and honest on camera. You know, and sometimes, as you know, Craig, when you interview people, you don't start with the big question right away. You got to lead up to, you know, kind of the more poignant things that are going to come out. One of our interviews, Adam Gilbertson, who I've known actually for quite a long time, you know, he was very controlled for about 30, 40 minutes. And then finally he started breaking down when he had to talk about the two men under his command, one from Perham, one from Frazee, Minnesota, that died in roadside bombs. And he had to inform the family back in Minnesota. And so then he started to really kind of show his emotion. And I found that with a lot of the interview subjects, that they are willing to talk about it. I think for a lot of them, it's therapeutic to talk about it as well.
What inspired the title, because I think it's so powerful. It's never left me. It seems simple. It goes to what you've just talked about, the mental health aspects of having to deal with war. How did you land on the title?
So in the 20 or 25 documentaries I've produced here over the years, finding a title is always the conundrum. I think finding a title to a movie or a documentary, it's like the last thing you do. It's like, what's going to be the title of this? Wounded was easy. That one was pretty easy. Barb Gravel, our director of television, kind of came up with that title, and it's simple, and I'll tell you in a few minutes why it's that title. This one was a little trickier. You know, you can have the longer title with the colon in there, and those get kind of long. But Colonel Eduardo Suarez, who's interviewed in the documentary, actually has that line. He says, you know, the experience I had, it was an experience, and it's never left me. And sometimes I find titles can be derived from some soundbite, something that someone has said, and it's like, oh, that's the soundbite. So that's how we came up with that, and I'll credit Colonel Suarez, who you'll see in the documentary, who works for Veterans Affairs now in St. Paul, with kind of coming up with that title.
Matt, neither you or I served in our country's military, and sometimes it's hard to gain respect and gain trust for veterans when you want to visit with them. Was that a challenge for you?
No, it wasn't. Like I said, I knew Adam from before, and you know, I've interviewed people so many years, Craig, just like you have, and I feel like I hopefully know what I'm doing, but it's still tricky. You know, you want to get their trust, and most of them I had chatted with ahead of time. You know, you don't just show up with a camera and start rolling. You build a relationship with them. You know, can we come interview you? Do you want us to come to Perham? Do you want to come to Fargo to the studio? Do you want to do this, do that? And you want to do what's comfortable for them. Some of them, interestingly enough, Craig, you would think most would be more comfortable being interviewed in their homes. But I had a couple guys, a former Marine from Dilworth, he wanted to come to the studio. He wanted to do it kind of in the studio, and he felt more comfortable there. So that was like interesting, and I accepted that, and he came to the studio. So, you know, I worked a lot on trying to find the right people, find people that were going to talk and do a good job. And you know, sometimes you interview more people than you need. And there was a couple I interviewed that did not make the final cut. That's nothing against them. It's just kind of the way it works. And when you're making a movie or a documentary, but I was very pleased with the responses I got.
Matt, you talked about how the film highlights mental health struggles. Is that the message you, as the film's creator, as the narrator, in doing your writing, is that the broader conversation that you're most interested in about veterans care and veteran awareness now after we watch this film?
At the Q&A panel on May 14th in Detroit Lakes at the Historic Holmes Theater, I do think that the Q&A will probably head in that direction. Christy Stites, who's in the movie, is going to be here from St. Paul. She's the suicide prevention coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and she'll be up on stage. So will Kurt Cannon. Kurt is a veteran. He also is the Clay County Veteran Services Director as well. And then the two people from the Wounded documentary, they don't really work with veterans in terms of professional counseling, but they were in the documentary, so they're going to be on stage too. But I do think there's going to be a lot of questions from the audience about that. But, you know, sometimes the discussion goes where you don't think it's going to go too, Craig. So I have to be ready for that. I'll ask a couple questions right after the films are done to kind of get things going. And then one of our Prairie Public employees with the communications department, she'll be in the audience with a handheld wireless microphone so that if people do have questions, and I'm sure they will, you know, they can speak into the microphone. So we'll see where the discussion goes, but I'm pretty sure mental health will be a big part of it.
The films are titled Wounded and also It's Never Left Me. They'll premiere Wednesday, May 14th at the Holmes Theater in Detroit Lakes. The event begins at 7 o'clock with the showing of It's Never Left Me, followed by Wounded at 7:30. And then, as Matt has described, a panel discussion follows at 8 o'clock. The two documentaries will then premiere on Prairie Public's television service, Wounded on Thursday, May 15th at 8:30 p.m. and It's Never Left Me on Thursday, May 22nd at 8:30 p.m. on the television service of Prairie Public.
The Detroit Lakes Theater thing is free, by the way, and open to anyone.
We look forward to many people attending. Matt, let's turn to Wounded. Mm-hmm. What's the thesis of that documentary?
So this kind of came out in some discussions that I had with John Harris, our CEO, and Barb Gravel, our director of television. And John thought that, you know, he's talked to people that have kind of participated in these wounded warrior groups and thought that would be a good idea. And so there's a lot of these wounded warrior type groups in the nation. There's the Wounded Warrior Project. That's the national organization. But there's a lot of offshoot organizations in Minnesota, like Hometown Hero Outdoors, Wounded Warrior Guide Service Minnesota, Wounded Warriors United Minnesota, and also Mandatory Fun Outdoors. Those are the four groups I found that I kind of worked with. And what these groups do, Craig, is they have lottery systems, and veterans can sign up and try to get involved in hunting trips, fishing trips, outdoor trips, all kinds of things. It's like a healing through adventure, I would say, therapy through adventure. And one group took some people up to Alaska for an elk hunt. We didn't go on that, but they really go quite a ways, and they're free. The veterans pay for nothing. They just, you know, bring their hunting equipment, but basically everything's paid for by these volunteer groups who raise money. The head of the organizations aren't paid either. They do it because they love it. And so we were able to go on two. There's quite a few shoots we went on. These were required some travel, but in the dead of winter or leading into winter, we got to go on a goose hunt near Moorhead, which was put on by Hometown Hero Outdoors, and that was a full day, get up at 5 a.m. We were there till 7 p.m. waiting for the geese, you know. And if people haven't seen what goose hunting is like, it's very interesting. Or the guys and the women, the soldiers, they just hide in these, like, shelters all day, and when the geese come, they start shooting. And so this took all day. We interviewed a bunch of people out there, and these were veterans from all over Minnesota that came to Moorhead, and the setting was kind of almost near the Walmart in Moorhead. You could see Moorhead from where we were. Another big shoot we went on was up at Red Lake in January, and we got caught in a blizzard up there, which was a little bit frightening out on the ice. And this was a massive ice fishing trip by Wounded Warriors United Minnesota. And we did a couple other ice fishing shoots as well near Perham. So you will see a lot of action video, a lot of interaction between the veterans. And that's what the documentary is about these groups and the comradeship that these soldiers share when they're on these adventure outings.
Matt, that's what I've noticed, that there's a recurring tension, I think, in both films between service pride, camaraderie, as you talked about, and also personal pain. Was it tough for you to navigate portraying both without diminishing either?
No, it ended up not being difficult at all. I want to credit my editors too. Mary Ballstead did a great job editing It's Never Left Me, and Ann Anderson is the editor on Wounded. And as we're speaking, Wounded is just wrapping up. It was a tight timeline to get this show done, but we're going to get it done in time, and we're just wrapping it up right now. But it's really a combination of the comradeship on these trips, plus talking about some healing, you know, talking about what they went through. So there's a little of that that's kind of similar to It's Never Left Me, except that you see these people, you know, out in, you know, ice fishing in the middle of winter or goose hunting or doing whatever they're doing. In one segment, too, two women make some food in a kitchen. So that can be therapy as well. We really wanted to do a dog sledding shoot with Mandatory Fun Outdoors there in Park Rapids, but there was just never enough snow this winter. So that never really happened. That would have been a phenomenal video shoot on that one.
Matt, you said that these two documentaries have been more than a year in the making. Mm-hmm. How did you initially contact veterans who chose to participate, especially in It's Never Left Me? How did you find them?
Sometimes it's through word of mouth, or, you know, Adam had a couple of options, a couple of people that he knew, Adam Gilbertson, that would be good. And then it's just kind of, I don't even know how to describe it to people that aren't in the business. It's just kind of using your intuition and wits to find people. Sometimes that means contacting friends of mine who work for the VFW or work for Veterans Services and saying, you know, who would be really good to talk to? So that's sometimes how it happens. I know we had one referral from Mindy Broden from Bemidji, who knew someone named Sarah Merritt, who turned out to be a really good interview, and Sarah was in the Iraq War. So sometimes it's a veteran saying, you really should interview this person. So it's just a lot of legwork and phone calling and texting and emailing and trying to find out who would do it. And I will tell you, there were a couple people, of course, won't name names because it's completely their privacy and their thing. But I had a couple people that were all ready to do interviews and backed out kind of at the last minute. And that's fine. It's very prerogative. Yeah, I didn't, you know, you just move on. You move on to the next one. And that did happen a couple times. So, you know, I'm like you said, Craig, you and I didn't serve. My dad was in the U.S. Marine Corps in World War II. He didn't want me or my brother or sister near the military. That's not what he wanted for us. He'd been with enough people that had seen enough bloodshed that he didn't want that for his kids. So I really credit my dad for not pushing me into it. But, you know, it's we didn't serve. So I can't understand what they're going through. And if they don't want to do an interview, you know, that's their prerogative and there's nothing you can do about it.
Matt, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of when Saigon fell to the North Vietnamese forces, which marked the official end of the Vietnam War. The veterans you are speaking with have a more recent service mm-hmm. history. Oftentimes, I think in our country, maybe even somewhat forgotten. Did you experience that?
We did interview one Vietnam veteran, Mike Monfru from Bemidji, and he was interesting because he was a sniper over in Vietnam, and he had some interesting comments about how they didn't get welcomed back. And it was important for these Iraq and Afghanistan vets to get that Minnesota welcome, and a lot of them did get that welcome. And so I think Mike was interesting saying, I don't want them to go through what I went through. Go get help, go get counseling, and we're going to welcome you back the right way.
Matt, it's been great to visit with you. Normally, you review movies for us, but of course, in this case, you were the producer, writer, and narrator of two documentaries that are going to appear on the television service of Prairie Public. Wounded will appear Thursday for the first time, May 15th at 8:30 p.m. Also, It's Never Left Me. That's scheduled for May 22nd at 8:30 p.m. on the television service of Prairie Public. But our listeners can attend a free screening along with a panel discussion. That's May 14th at the Holmes Theater in Detroit Lakes. The evening will begin with a 7 p.m. showing of It's Never Left Me, followed by Wounded at 7:30. And then, of course, we'll conclude with a panel discussion. Matt, congratulations on this work. I know it's not easy to create documentaries like this with a small staff. Did the fact that our staff is small, as we kind of wrap up this discussion, impact, do you think, your ability to produce this film?
Not really. We're used to it here. You know, we don't have 15 producers on a documentary. This isn't a Ken Burns situation. So I'm used to it. I got to find all the people to interview. And sometimes that's easy. Sometimes it's hard. And you just get through it. And, you know, you try to maximize the travel time to get to the best things like the goose hunt or the ice fishing on Red Lake. So it's what we do here at Prairie Public. And I want people to know that the work we do here is important. And this is the stuff that we do here that really no other TV station in the state does. Of course, there's Minnesota public stations that do similar work to us, and I want to credit them as well. But within North Dakota, you know, we do these long form documentaries, and Prairie Public's the place to find them.
What surprised you most, would you say, in your personal reflection about these two documentaries?
Oh, boy. I just gained a new appreciation for what these men and women went through, I guess. There's a fascinating soundbite in It's Never Left Me by one of the soldiers. He said, America wasn't at war. America was at the mall. Basically, he was saying, this wasn't World War II. We were over there, you know, sacrificing in the desert. And the American public, whether they were for or against the Iraq War and the Afghanistan wars, was really kind of detached from it. And I think that was his point. And I think I gained a new appreciation for what these people went through over there and how us as civilians here back in the States really, I mean, we kind of knew what they were going through the TV coverage, but I don't think you can ever really know what they went through.
Matt, thanks for joining us
you
today.
Bet.
Main Street will continue in just a moment. And of course, Danielle Webster will be along with all of the news of North Dakota. I'm Craig Blumenschein in studio with Todd McDonald. Todd, how are you this afternoon?
I'm well, thanks, Craig. How about you?
I'm doing well. Todd, of course, we've just started our spring pledge drive. Today's May Day.
Yes, happy May Day.
May Day is a sign of spring. This is a short membership drive. And we hope that people will consider becoming a sustaining member now to ensure the news, music, and stories that our listeners rely on continue. Listeners, Todd, tell us that one of the most popular times to listen to public radio is when you're in the car, when you're commuting, shuttling kids to and from school, or just running errands.
Well, while that's going on, you're listening to the radio. And I'm hoping that wherever you go, Prairie Public Radio is along for the ride. Programs like Main Street bring a kind of a portable wisdom that travels with you. It informs and entertains you and keeps you sane as you happily ride along in your car. We know some of those commutes in North Dakota, well, some are short and some are just
Our notes say short, I think.
Or some are just some long straight roadways for many miles. So with Main Street on Prairie Public, you probably wish they were a little bit longer maybe. Call 800-359-4145 or join online at prairiepublic.org. You'll be supporting radio that improves the quality of your mornings, afternoons, and all the time in between.
I like the fact that Main Street is considered portable wisdom, Todd. I thought that was good writing there. But we're asking listeners now to make your move. Join us as a sustainer or increase your monthly gift today if you already are a sustainer. Why now? Well, because it's time that we consider how valuable public radio is. John and Paul Martineau from City, Montana are matching every dollar from new or increased monthly givers. And that's a worthwhile match to consider. Your support keeps Prairie Public commercial-free. Todd, we are commercial-free and community-focused. As Todd said just a moment ago, go right now to prairiepublic.org. There's a big red donate button. You can't miss it. And consider your sustaining membership, or you can call us at 800-359-4145.
And when we mention sustainer, here's how it works. You become a new sustaining giver or increase your monthly support, and or our generous donors will match it automatically. Whether it's $5 or $50, your matched gift helps ensure Prairie Public remains a trusted source for news, music, and storytelling in our region. This is support that lasts, and it starts with you. And it all starts by going online to prairiepublic.org.
Our listeners know that their support keeps Prairie Public strong, and it helps make public media available to everyone in our region. Doesn't matter if you're in Botineau, if you're in Fargo, if you're in Wishick, or anywhere in between. Donate today, and we'll send you a Prairie Public and Public Radio sticker sheet and a bumper sticker as our way of saying thanks. Stick them, share them, and just show your love for public media. Again, we're asking you to become a sustaining member, and that's a key word, a sustaining member of prairiepublic.org. You can go online or call us right now, 800-359-4145, to make your gift.
And we'll be going back to Main Street in less than a minute. But first, won't you give a gift of support to this public radio service? You know, it brings you news, information, and rich storytelling every day. When you flip on the radio or fire up the app, and you trust that it's going to be there for you. But the only way Prairie Public can sustain this operation is through contributions from members and listeners like you who pay it forward.
That's right. So as we conclude this pledge break, we're going to be here just a few days, Todd. I think the pledge break concludes next Tuesday. But we're asking people not to wait, to go online right now at prairiepublic.org, or you can do that old school thing and give us a phone call, 800-359-4145, however you choose to become a pledging member. We deeply appreciate it, and it's important now, so we hope that you'll give us a call.
Tick-tock, tick-tock. The clock started ticking on the 69th legislative session in North Dakota on January 7th. Seems like light years ago, right? The legislature has 80 days to complete its business unless the governor calls for a special session.
Like Governor Burgum did in October 2023. That was to address a budget bill that ran afoul of the North Dakota Supreme Court.
Yeah, that could definitely happen. So why would Governor Armstrong want to call a special session now?
Property tax relief.
Of course.
But before it gets to that point, the legislature is considering a backup bill to get to a compromise. That bill is 1168.
Welcome to In Session. I'm Eric Etheridge.
I'm Ann Olquist.
So Ann, 1168, how is it different?
Well, legislators were even a bit confused as well why there was a need for a backup bill, including Representative Mike Nathy, who sponsored the original bill. That's Bill 1176, favored by the governor.
Senate's going to do what you guys are going to do. It just doesn't make any sense to me that the Senate would do that. Again, we're all operating in good faith. We're all going towards the same goal. And we've come to a probably 90% agreement on this, obviously, other than the skin in the game. I don't think we need to be at this time of session start to play games.
So did Representative Nathy get an explanation?
You know what's fun about watching the legislature is I feel like I'm getting to know them through this marathon of policymaking. And one of the legislators, Senator Brad Beckedahl, he's consistently emerging as the explainer legislator.
1168 is a bill that mirrors 1176 because we like 1176, but it also has the Senate priorities that are not yet included in 1176. So if 1176 is not the bill vehicle, we want to make sure that we still pass property tax relief to the public. And that's why 1168 is there.
So just to recap on the debate over property tax relief, Governor Armstrong wants $1,550 in a tax credit, more than triple what it currently is for homeowners. That got knocked down to $1,250 because the bill would rely on earnings from the legacy fund. Legislators were worried that there would be tapping too much into those earnings. And what is the prognosis for this bill?
So my sources, as of today's taping, think that 1176 is going to pass, though that's the original bill, that the tax credit will land somewhere around $1,500. And, you know, one of the big fault lines in this bill was that 3% cap on local governments. And that 3% cap, basically Bismarck telling local governments, you can't spend more than 3% from your property tax revenues. You've got to hold the line here.
So, Anne, is it just me, or is this exactly what Governor Armstrong proposed back in January after this long marathon? Is it the same thing, pretty much?
Yeah, it's like another Groundhog Day. Yes, it is almost exactly what Governor Armstrong proposed at the beginning of the legislative session.
Okay, time for our three numeros of the week. Anne, what you got?
Well, actually, I'm going to pitch it to you, Eric, because you were at our donor dinner in Bismarck.
Oh, that is right. That was last week at the wonderful, if you have not gone to the North Dakota Gateway for Science, overlooking the Missouri River in Bismarck, I mean, it is a beautiful setting outside and in, and we had this wonderful donor dinner. 130 of our closest friends and allies came to chat and chew over all things Prairie Public. Of course, they are interested in a lot of things. Our funding, which you may have heard about, is in jeopardy on a couple of different fronts. They were curious about all that. So our CEO, John Harris, gave them all the information, the latest that he had. But it was heartwarming, heartening to just to see so much support and see these folks come together in the name of love and Prairie Public.
I love those moments, too. I call it touching mission. And you can meet our audiences in a room, a bunch of folks. So I'm so glad that you went.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Sorry you missed it, but you were in Alaska sailing down the sound there, right?
I was doing no sailing. It rained the entire time. I was inside trying to keep warm.
So Anne, your number is a little bit smaller than mine.
Yeah, the next number is 2, as in the second telephone town hall that Representative Julie Fedorchuk scheduled for May the 1st. So my last number has to do with educational savings accounts. And you talked about Governor Armstrong. If this bill passes 1176 on property tax relief, it's a big win for Governor Armstrong. His other big issue were educational savings accounts. 5 bills around educational savings accounts all died.
They all died.
So the scales of policymaking.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some. And, you know, we'll have to see after it's all said and done what kind of session it was for Governor Armstrong and his political agenda. I'm sure historians will be writing that in the not too distant future.
And we will be talking about it with Fargo Forum columnist and reporter Rob Port on May 22nd at Craftwell.
Yes, we have an event to tell folks about, an in-person in-session.
We don't have the details up on the website yet. You are part of our in-session audience, so keep a lookout for it. We will be putting it on all the socials, on the Prairie Public website, so keep an eye out for it. But for right now, just put a little bow on your calendar. It says in-session taping at Craftwell in Fargo on May the 22nd with Ann and Eric.
Look at that. You, in-session listener, are first to know. An exclusive there for you. Say, hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Tate Calloway's our radio studio operator. Christine McClellan is our communications manager, and Leah Peterson is our digital communications specialist. I'm Eric Deffer.
And I'm Ann Alquist. We'll see you next week.
And our thanks to Eric and Ann for bringing us that episode of In Session. It's been a fascinating way to keep up with the legislature. I'm Craig Blumenschein in the Main Street studio with Todd McDonald from our news department. Todd, how are you?
Hi. Hey, Craig. I'm doing great. Thanks. Opening day of our spring member drive. How can things be bad?
Opening day to me is baseball, Todd. Not that I equate opening day to spring memberships drive, but that is the
case. We're throwing out the first pitches here. Yeah.
That's right. There you go. And it is May Day, and right, you said that it's the beginning of our spring membership drive. What we're hoping our listeners do right now, Todd, is pick up the phone and become a sustaining member. That's oh so important to the mission of Prairie Public. That number is 800-359-4145, or even easier, go to prairiepublic.org and make your contribution. You make, of course, public radio here in North Dakota and the Prairie region possible.
And happy May Day to everyone listening. Hopefully you've had some April showers, and we're now anticipating those May flowers. So today is the perfect time to spring into action and support Prairie Public. May Day is all about renewal and community, and there's no better way to celebrate both than by investing in something that brings knowledge, connection, and creativity to everyone. Your gift keeps trusted news, inspiring stories, and great music blooming all year long. So make your donation now at prairiepublic.org, and let's start this May with a celebration of community.
I should let our listeners kind of on the inside a little bit. We had a full staff meeting earlier this week here at Prairie Public, and as you look around that room, or as I looked around the room, what I saw, Todd, was dedicated professionals who are committed to public media. So now here's our pledge drive and our listeners' chance to give smarter. To double their impact, Janet and Paul Martineau of Sydney, Montana, are matching all new or increased monthly sustaining gifts. That's important for us and a good value for our listeners. It's simple. $20 a month becomes $40 a month. $5 becomes $10. Support the programming you've come to rely on. Donate now at prairiepublic.org or give us a call at 800-359-4145.
And, you know, you talk about community support right there. Janet and Paul Martineau, Sydney, Montana, doing that matching funding for us today. And so if you're looking for the best way to fit a contribution into your budget for this station, become a sustaining member at the same time. Because sustaining members decided once to make an automatic monthly contribution from their credit card or bank account, and most people, you know, well, they contribute $10 a month on this plan, but the amount is totally up to you. So as a sustainer, you'll become a member of Prairie Public until you choose not to. There's no annual renewals to worry about, no mailings from the station, no worries during on-air membership drives. But best of all, sustaining memberships help build a stable source of revenue for Prairie Public. So when you contribute today, ask how you can become a sustainer.
Todd, if you find that you've been getting more value from the station, if our listeners find that in this past year, please consider becoming now an Investor Circle member. Join the circle by making a sustaining contribution of $100 a month or an annual gift of $1,200 or more. Your contribution as an Investor Circle member will be an investment in a statewide network that informs and entertains all North Dakotans. They want to make sure that it will be here today and tomorrow for all who listen, even for those who can't afford it. Call now. There's a fanfare. We welcome back to the Main Street studio, Matt Olien. Matt, thanks for joining us again here today.
You bet,
on
Craig.
Main Street.
Yeah.
The movie this week is called Sinners. Let's listen to the trailer.
We've been gone a long time. We back now.
You twins? Nah, we cousins.
There are legends of people with the gift of making music so true it can conjure spirits from the past and the future. This gift can bring fame and fortune.
Will somebody take me in your eyes?
But it also can pierce the veil between life and death.
Listen here, this ain't no house party.
Take me in your arms tonight.
Y'all ready to drink? Y'all ready to sweat till y'all stink?
You want some?
You keep dancing with the devil.
Careful, boy. You're gonna bite off more than you can chew.
All right, Matt, before we visit with you, we have a special guest. Our radio board operator, Tay Calloway, is on the other side of the glass from you here in the Main Street studio, and he's seen the movie. So let's, Matt, ask him first. Tay, what did you think?
You know, I really enjoyed the movie. I went and watched it twice, actually, back to back.
What stuck with you? Why did you like it so much?
Honestly, it was very deep because recently I went to Alabama, which is right next to Mississippi, and I saw cotton for the first time. And I think seeing that reflected in the film kind of really connected me to my heritage.
I agree with Tay. This is a deep movie, Craig, with a lot of things going on. It's set in Clarksdale, Mississippi in 1932, and it stars Michael B. Jordan in the dual roles of the Smokestack twins, Smoke and Stack. And this is part vampire, part horror, part Delta Blues music film is what it is. It's really an unusual film shot in 70 millimeter. It's gorgeous to look at, right, Tay?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just looked amazing. And Ryan Coogler's the director, and he's got a heck of a track record, especially with Michael B. Jordan. You know, Black Panther, Judas and the Black Messiah, Creed, and Fruitvale Station. But this time, he really hits it out of the park, I think. The film's a little confusing in parts. I found the plot, you know, a little tricky to follow here and there. It's a long movie, 2 hours and 18 minutes, but it's a combination. You know, when the film starts, Craig, you think you're watching a film about 1930s Mississippi. The Smokestack twins come back to Mississippi. They want to open up this juke joint, you know, and they have to buy the property from a racist, you know, white person in town, and they get the juke joint going, and they want to play music there. But if you've seen the trailer, we know vampires are coming. And when they arrive, it's pretty interesting and kind of funny. There's a hilarious scene where these three people who end up to be vampires come and play this little banjo song as they try to get in the juke joint. And the audience was laughing. It was really hilarious. But it's a really interesting, deep movie. It's about the racism of the time. It's about the Delta Blues. It's about kind of surviving and getting through life and being free. And Jordan's really good in the part. Haley Steinfeld from True Grit fame. She plays kind of the femme fatale who's a love interest of one of the twins. Miles Caton plays Preacher Boy. He's a cousin of the twins who's a phenomenal guitar player, kind of in that Robert Johnson blues mode. And that is a critical part of this story, is the fact that he can play this guitar like nobody's business. That becomes a real interesting plot point, which we won't get into. But yeah, I liked it a lot. It's visually interesting. It's an original story. Michael B. Jordan continues to be a major film star. There's an amazing cameo at the end of the film. Stay tuned for that. Do not leave when those credits start rolling, because you're going to want to wait for that. That's a real sting in the tail and a poignant ending to the movie, I thought.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people leaving before,
they shouldn't
before
have.
That scene.
Explain to me, Matt. I just don't get it from, and I have not seen the movie, how supernatural or horror elements, as you mentioned, dancing vampires, how can that be effective, or was it effective in supporting the film's theme, or did it detract?
Well, yeah, they're marrying two genres here. It's a period film that's a horror movie, but it's also about the Delta Blues. So it's a tricky thing to pull off, and I think Coogler basically pulls it off. So you're trying to combine two genres into one movie. So you're probably asking, how does this film, which starts out as this you know, we're gonna open up a juke joint, and there's some racism, and it's 1930s Mississippi, and there's a lot of cotton fields and people picking cotton. Delroy Lindo is in this movie as well. He's kind of a major star. How does that get into a vampire? You have to go see. I do think the transition when it happens is handled pretty well. But definitely, there's no question, in the middle of this movie, everything switches. I mean, the whole tone of it switches. And I guess I think he probably walked that line pretty well with the tonality of it. But again, that Delta blues guitar angle is really important to this story. Yeah, obviously, vampires show up in Clarksdale, Mississippi. It doesn't sound reasonable. It's not supposed to sound reasonable. This is not reality. It's a movie. And if you go in with an open mind, I think you're going to enjoy the music, too. There's a lot of music in this movie. So it's an interesting swing for the fences moment by Ryan Coogler. And the box office is it's eating up the box office. It is just dominating the box office right now. So he's definitely hit a sweet spot here.
I mean, the juke joint serves as both a sanctuary and it turns into a battlefield, it appears to me.
It does. Right? Yep.
Gentlemen, what did you think about the oner? And first, tell us what a oner is at the start of the show.
A oner is pretty much just a single take that the director does, or you know, the cinematographer does through for a certain scene. And you'll kind of go around about an entire, I'm trying to think of
setting. There's no editing within the scene, right? Tay, yes. That's what you're telling me. It's all shot in almost a continuous motion.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
There has been a movie released recently, Matt, and maybe you and I talked about it, that was shot in one scene. Does it come to your mind?
Well, Birdman was almost that was, I think, pretty sure that was close to one scene, or that it might have been one or two cuts. I'm not sure. There wasn't many if there were in that film. A tricky thing to pull off. Coogler likes to do that, and you know, visually this film is really good. I mean, the visuals are stunning in Sinners, so and the performances are good too. Michael B. Jordan's great, Haley Steinfeld's great. But the cinematography is amazing.
All right, Matt, let's move on to the trivia part of our review today. Matt, of course, Black Panther was released in 2018 and was nominated for Best Picture at the 91st Academy Awards in 2019, but it didn't win. Which film did?
Green Book, which was a controversial winner, and I don't know if that film's going to hold up over the years. We will see.
We've been to the movies with Tay Calloway and Matt Aline.
Well, Main Street will be right back. Coming up yet, today's Dakota Date Book. But first, it's May Day, the first day of our spring membership drive here at Prairie Public. I'm Todd McDonald, here with your regular host, Craig Blumenschein.
Great to be with you, Todd.
And great to be with you, Craig. And we're inviting you to join in the celebration, along with Tay Calloway, and making your contribution now. And you can support the programs you count on every day by calling 800-359-4145.
Got a rally in everyone. Danielle Webster's on the other side of the glass. Can't wait to bring us the news here again in just a moment. So, Danielle, we're glad that you are with us too. But if you've never given before, please know that Prairie Public is here because someone else took that first step from being a listener to becoming a member of Prairie Public. Individual contributions from thousands of listeners provide money needed to pay for programs you listen to every day. And that's a remark that I always make. Morning Edition, All Things Considered, all of the great Saturday programming, Todd, we pay for those programs. Mm-hmm. Those are not free and provided to us. So today we're asking you to join all those other members by making a contribution of your own. A gift in any amount will pay for the hundreds of hours of listening you do and that you will do in the coming year. And it will ensure that programs such as Main Street are available for the next person to discover. Join us online at prairiepublic.org today. Click that donate button or give us a call at 800-359-4145.
Well, you are listening to Main Street, and you rely on the skilled and trusted journalists to bring you the news you need and to stay informed, to be a global citizen. And that doesn't come free. As Craig mentioned, it's free of commercials and commercial influence. But you know all the reasons why you like Prairie Public, you like public radio, so what's holding you back? Your valued contribution at prairiepublic.org or by calling 800-359-4145 takes just a couple moments of your day, and it's meaningful. It serves as a gift that you see so much in return daily. I mean, listen to Craig do his interviews, and Craig, I have to say this, I really appreciate your interview style.
Well, thank you,
it's
Todd.
Just not the surface questions of, you know, subject du jour. You challenge your guests every now and then, just kind of pushing into for more details.
So it's a great honor for me to visit with the folks in North Dakota. It really is, and I have a license to speak with a lot of people, Todd, mm-hmm. and I take that very seriously. And thank you. That's a very nice compliment.
Certainly. Well, it's reflected in your guest's answer, too. They respect that.
Well, we'll continue on here. Prairie Public is a rare thing. I came from Wyoming, which was also one of the few statewide networks that cover nearly every corner of the state it serves, and that's what Prairie Public does here in North Dakota. It takes 17 transmitters to make that happen. Stations and translators in Bowman, Hettinger, Devil's Lake, Jamestown, Dickinson, Beach, and about everywhere in between make sure that our coverage of local issues is heard by everyone. And we are adding another Western reporter to ensure stories are being told across our state. No matter where you're from in North Dakota, the beautiful regions of eastern Montana, or even northwest Minnesota, you're connected to the important stories of our region reported by our talented journalists here at Prairie Public. Give us a call right now or log online, prairiepublic.org.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 1st. Becoming an American citizen was a chaotic process in the early days of the United States. During what became known as the Old Law period, there was no official federal oversight of the citizenship process. Early laws allowed any municipal, county, state, or federal court to grant citizenship and did not require courts to issue certificates. When certificates were issued, they varied in size, shape, and design. The contents also varied, with many leaving out biographical information. Many certificates were just certified copies of the court order granting citizenship. With no centralized system, certificates could easily be transferred from one person to another. The lack of any security features meant the certificates were difficult to authenticate, but easy to forge. Congress recognized that the lack of uniformity was a problem and took steps to formalize the citizenship process. In 1906, Congress passed the Basic Naturalization Act. The law made the process consistent across the entire country. There was one certificate that would be used in every court, and a copy of that certificate was filed with the newly created Naturalization Service. The creation of the certificate was an improvement, but there was still no uniform citizenship test. Some judges did not administer a test at all. Some included trick questions like, "How high is the Bunker Hill Monument?" so they could deny citizenship to someone they did not like. On this date in 1908, the North Lemon newspaper printed an article highlighting complaints about the lack of a citizenship test. The article reported that 80 people applied for citizenship at Dickinson, but, as it stated, it was shown that many of the would-be citizens who have lived in this country from 6 to 10 years have no more idea of the real meaning of citizenship to the United States than they did when they arrived in this country. The article complained that some applicants seemed to think it was not important to know who the president was or what form of government the country has. In 1950, the Immigration Service narrowed the range of acceptable topics for the test to highlight knowledge of the Constitution and American history. Today, the citizenship consists of 100 questions about the Constitution, American government, elections, and American history. Today's Dakota Datebook is written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
And that's a wrap for this Thursday edition of Main Street during our pledge drive here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us, and we hope you go to prairiepublic.org and click on that donate button and become a sustaining member of Prairie Public. Coming on Monday's Main Street is my interview with Linda Pauling. She'll be in Fargo tomorrow, and she's the mother of Make-A-Wish. She'll share how one boy's dream launched a global movement of hope. Plus, May is Stroke Awareness Month, and Essentia Health experts remind us why every second counts and how you can walk the walk for stroke recovery. That's all coming Monday. on Main Street. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. And remember, there's still time to go to prairiepublic.org and click on that donate button.